ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bring you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's the assistant to the regional manager, Joe George, behind the glass. And it is a getaway day. It's a going Friday. Away day. A Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Your measly midday, guys. JG, he's got, did you see Joe has the Astros hat?
He's all Houston. Look at, he's Houstoned out.
H-Town versus everyone.
Except the Cubs.
I'm not going to, never mind. How many Astro hats do you own, JG?
Five.
That's the first time I've seen that one. It's got your initials embroidered to the side.
Yes.
I like that.
It's from my Lids days.
Oh, really?
Oh, did you run the sewing machine from time to time?
Oh, yeah.
For real?
Oh, all the time.
You know how to sew?
Yeah, if you run the...
No, the embroidery machine.
Yeah, if you run the... embroider? If you run the store at a Lids, you got to be able to...
embroider?
Do the sewing machine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's good. I like a man who can do that. That's awesome. Can you embroider some things for me?
I mean, all you really do is, like, you put in, a logo, and then it does it for you.
Oh, he's pressing a button. What's that logo on the left side of the hat?
It's 2017 World Series Championship.
Oh, it's the World Series Championship hat. Cool. Speaking of the 2017 World Championship team, you know how many Astros are still on that team? Not many. You know one player that's on that team that is coming back tonight?
Three now, right?
It's Altuve, who makes his return tonight. Alex Bregman. Presley was not there?
No, it was Lance McCullers.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Is that it? That's all?
I think so.
Yeah, because Brantley wasn't there because they beat the Indians when he was on the Indians, when they were the Indians, when they were on their way.
Canceled.
No, I said it because they were the Indians at the time.
Yeah, last year was his first championship.
There you go.
For the who were the catchers? The catchers were Brian McCann and Robinson Chirinos.
No. Captain Caveman, McCann and
I think Gattis.
Evan Gattis.
I think he was the third string though. I don't think he was backup. He was like the emergency catcher that they gave up on after they saw him catch.
Did
like,
they get
four
Chirinos
games.
A ring?
I think Chirinos was on that team back in 2017. Oh. But Gattis was never the backup catcher because he was the worst defensive catcher I have ever seen in my life at the big league.
Yeah, he wasn't great.
Yeah, he was brutal. Actually, Chirinos was not on that team. He was on. He was still at Texas in 2003. They had a backup catcher on the 17 Astros. I can't think.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't Gattis.
You sure it wasn't McCann and Gattis, huh?
They had, maybe it was Gattis. Maybe I stand corrected. Hmm. That's surprising to me that Gattis was the primary backup catcher on a real baseball team because he is the worst defensive catcher
I've ever seen in my life. They ran. It wasn't even like close to even what they're doing now. I mean, they randomly went to a backup catcher. It was Brian McCann.
Wow, that's shocking to me. All right, whatever. Jose Altuve makes his triumphant return to Minute Maid Park in Houston. Isn't this awesome? Isn't this great? Jose Altuve, he's beating every expectation. We were thinking like June 1, optimistically. Bob Nightingale was writing this month in May. He wrote an article that said the Astros are targeting the last homestand in May to get Jose Altuve back. And here he is, May 19th. He's going to make his Houston Astro debut. This is great. This is awesome. The greatest Houston Astro of all time is back, baby.
It's just fantastic because you know what? They've been able to weather the storm. You know, we didn't expect or want or ask for any of the injuries. We didn't know how long they were going to last in a lot of cases or, you know, didn't know that they were going to be there at all. If you listen to Jeff Bagwell when he talked about Michael Brantley. But what you really do know is the fact that when you get a guy like Altuve back after the unfortunate WBC incident, you come back and you feel like you're going to get stronger. Well, you've won four in a row. You're on a roll. You've really endured one of the tougher starts to a schedule in all of Major League Baseball. And now you're about to continue embarking on a lighter portion of the program when you just got done beating the Cubs. You know, you're looking for two series out of the next three against the A's, the worst team in the game. And you feel like you can really capitalize right now and to capitalize while having Altuve back in the lineup, whether it's to get comfortable again or if he can actually kind of join in and pick up and really start hitting as well. It'd be fantastic, but it's great to have him back.
Should we talk about Astros lineups in every segment today?
No.
Just
three in a row as we were... Yeah.
Specific segments where we talk just strictly lineups and how the Astros should construct their lineups.
Don't get me started, man, because I'm...
Why not?
Like, I know you want to. I know you want to, but it's like I literally debated it because it's like when you don't know anything... But Texans football, and you have, you know how they gave us those footballs a year ago? When you got two Texans football stuck in your mouth for like the majority of your days.
It's a big mouth.
It's, yeah, it's, It's a bit much.
It's a big mouth. What are the expectations for Jose Altuve this season? Like, it's kind of difficult to do the counting stats because he's missed the first quarter of the year. But what does the season look like for Jose Altuve? Last year, I infamously said that Altuve was past his prime, which, I mean, I still stand by. But because I don't think he's the Jose Altuve that's winning MVPs and, you know, combining the offense with the defense and the speed, like, he's a little bit past his prime. That said, he's still elite. He's still the best second baseman in all of baseball. He exceeded expectations a year ago. What are the expectations, do you think, for the mighty Jose Altuve?
Look, I think if he comes in and he provides some pop, which he's been able to do the last couple of years, I'm not expecting 30 bombs for a guy that missed the first month of the season, but I'm expecting a guy that is capable of hitting home runs, that's going to hit about 275-ish, even if that's on the light side from what he has been doing. I think flirting with 300 would be just an added bonus, but I think he's going to, you know, he's capable of being big in big moments. He's going to be steady at second base, but the main thing is he provides leadership. He gets on base. He can hit for power, and in the middle of that line, at the top of that lineup, with the middle of the lineup kind of getting better pitches to see because of who's in front and behind them, I think it strengthens the entire offensive lineup in particular when he comes back.
Let's go over under. Last year, Jose Altuve hit 300 on the nose last season. Does Jose Altuve get to 300 this year? You kind of just mentioned.
Yeah, I don't think so. As I just said to you, I'll stick with that. I really believe that he's going to sit around 275 ish, and I'm fine with that. You know, I mean, I didn't expect him to hit 300 a year ago, and he did. So I think coming off the injury and because of the fact that he only got one hit in the minors in his rehab sessions, I believe that it's going to take a little time for him to settle in. So by the end of the season, I think he'll be peaking. But I don't think he's going to get there and get to 300 this year.
I'll go 285. You said 270.
Where'd
Joe go?
275.
Joe literally left the room.
Yeah.
How about that? How about that disrespect? Yep. So Joe's not going to play in part of this game. What do you think about the OBP? Last year was a 387 OBP, 362 over the course of his career for Jose Altuve.
I think it'll still fall in kind of in between the two. I think I don't see any reason for any – like what he – I'm not expecting Jose Abreu like all of a sudden like results – from an Altuve. I don't think he's going to fall off the planet. I don't think he's going to have a problem getting on base. I don't think he's going to have a problem still hitting for power. I don't think we're going to have a return from injury, you know, question mark like Michael Brantley, or when he does return that he's going to be lacking something that he had before. I don't think he's to that point in his career yet. So I think I expect the same old Altuve with maybe a little drop because of the fact that he isn't right yet.
So what was the number? Put it in, because I'm going to do a little average here. I'm going to play with
something. You say between... So
last year, he had a 387. He had a 362 for his career.
So we'll say 372.
372? I'll go 370. Oh, Price is right, Joe. I'll go 375 for Altuve's on-base percentage. And then last year, he slugged... Joe, you left the room, so you're not playing. Jose last year slugged 533. His career slugging is 468. What is Altuve's slug, you think?
500?
Yeah. Ooh, that's... It's a little lofty, I think. I'll go 475 for Jose Altuve. So
I believe in the little fella.
Now we need Joe back to do the math for us. average it out, the blankers and I, not Joe, because he left the room. We have Jose Altuve hitting 280, Joe, with a 373.5 on base percentage and a 487 slugging. No, that's what we have. We have a 280 average. A 370, let's call it 373 on base, and a 487 slugging. You taking that?
I would take that. That's pretty solid.
That's not bad.
It's not great, but
it's pretty great for a second baseman. That's pretty great for a second baseman.
I mean, yeah, but he's not just a second baseman.
But, I mean, you look at that OPS.
I mean, Chris Russo might be an idiot because he's put out his top 10 players that are currently active that are going to the Hall of Fame. He didn't include Jose Altuve on that
list. When he wrote the list, Altuve was not active.
Oh, that's such a dumb semantics argument. I hope that's what that
guy is. I don't give Mad Dog credit for being that clever.
But you know what's funny about Mad Dog is that, like, he really is, like, one of the national people that's, like, defended the Astros.
He has.
I was shocked to not see Jose Altuve on his list.
I bet you it was a mistake.
We've had him on the show
multiple
times where he's defended the Astros, and he's supported, to some degree, the Astros.
I asked Mad Dog once, what is it, you know, how did you get by working with the other guy that you didn't like very much?
Yeah, he did.
At least Joel's not falling asleep.
Yeah, you're right. Francesca, that's what I was looking for.
He did. Were you at that at Radio Row at Super Bowl when he did it again?
Oh, yeah, I was.
He did it twice?
Yeah. So we were situated right across from him. He was kind of kitty corner from us, and he was doing, like, marathon shows. And we looked over there at one point, and he had his chin slipping between the palms of two hands as he was like nodding off and falling asleep again. We're like, oh my God, he's doing it again.
That's incredible. I hope one day, since we're active on Twitch, we have that moment to go viral for the station.
For one, somebody to fall asleep?
I just want someone to fall asleep.
Who's the most likely person to fall asleep on the air?
I think you got to be in the morning.
Anybody capable of having a food coma?
If I did the mornings, I would probably fall asleep. I'm not going to lie.
Boy, having to like be the support system when Lisa did mornings, it's hell. Like, and you know, and she obviously with the makeup and all the, and for TV, it's different. It's even more like excruciating, but just getting up that early, it's like going to an Astros game or a Rockets game is taxing because it screws with your sleep.
Oh, I thought you meant for like the average Joe.
Because you normally, you set a different schedule for yourself for when you're trying to get enough sleep before you have to get up and start your day.
Yeah.
And everything is just off kilter. So if you go to a game and then by the time you get home, it's like 10:30 or 11 and you got to get up in like 4 hours.
Yeah, that's true. Who said it at 2 o'clock? Everybody's favorite game. Joe George tries to trick us and go Bush League with people that say things. All right. Guess who said it?
I will not go Bush League this week.
I'm glad you admit that you did last week.
Yeah, of course I did. I needed a victory. Sometimes you have to circumvent the system necessary. To get a W.
He was getting signs from his first base coach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Getting the pitches from the first base coach.
I was.
B-Mac. Actually, I don't think it was the first base coach. I think it was in the dugout.
Yeah, it was B-Mac sent him from the dugout.
Yep.
Just a bunch of Paul clips.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Anyways, who said it at 2 o'clock? Is this Harden thing growing legs? Is it just a... Like, is it a bluff? Like, what is going on with that? Also, I think that the Texans helped their quarterback position more than just about everybody else this offseason. But one thing I noticed yesterday, because when the Astros don't play baseball, I just have time for my mind to wander, which is a very dangerous place to be. Very, very dangerous place to be. Astros lead baseball in team ERA. Does Martin Maldonado get factored into that equation? 713-780-ESPN. Also, what are your expectations for Jose Altuve makes his triumphant return tonight at Minute Maid Park? 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch. We love you, Twitchers. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I love my Twitchers and I love Pinnacle Construction. You're probably like me or you're like my wife. You're thinking about improving your home this summer. Yeah, you probably are. Or your wife probably is. Well, Pinnacle Construction is for you, and it's peak time. Have a plan to enhance your living space. You'll love it. Your spouse will love it. Your kids will love it. How about, you know, extending out the mudroom a little bit? Get some square feet to the house. You can get that back when you sell your house. You can do that. Something you're dreaming of, they can do it. How about a kitchen remodel? Dream it. They can do it. Bathroom remodel. Maybe you want a new, you know, jacuzzi situation in your bathroom. Maybe you want a new shower. It's just outdated. You want to, you know, freshen up the look. Whatever you can dream up, Pinnacle Construction can do. From floors to cabinets to everything in between, just a new paint job. You might just be looking for that. How about the pool? It gets hot here in the summer. I know you think, you know, I know you've thought of that. Hot tub, spa. Well, Pinnacle Construction does it all. They're the name you need to know. General contractor with decades of experience that will help with any kind of repair or upgrade. You've been waiting for the right people. I'm telling you about the right people. They will not charge you through the roof, and it's someone you can trust. Pinnacle Construction, owned by Doug Johnson, native Houstonian, serving all of the greater Houston area. Doug and his team guarantees quality in-house work, and they're here to stay over two decades of experience in the greater Houston area. Licensed and insured with stellar customer service for every project and every customer. You can dream of it. They can do it. Get your free estimates. Free estimates. Why not just get an estimate with a qualified Pinnacle Construction right now? It's free. Get the free estimate. Call or text 281-900-3004, 281-900-3004, or you can head over to the website, 975generalcontractor.com. Take a look at some of the beautiful work they've done, 975generalcontractor.com. Financing options are available. Don't have to pay it all up front. Ask for the ESPN discount because we like to take care of you. Pinnacle Construction, board and building in Texas with over 20 years of general contracting experience.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Mr. Brostash says, Astros lineup talk better than regurgitated Texans talk. What do you think of that? What's better, Astros lineup talk or regurgitated Texans talk? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. I'm going to put that on Twitter, actually. A poll on Twitter. You can go vote on it at Jeremy Branham. What do you think?
I mean, I was debating this right when I was debating if a three-hour show with content that has variety with every different segment and actually is compelling for people to chime into, or a two-hour show repeated 4 hours a day is a better choice to entertain people. And then in getting into all that, I scratched my temple and thought, I think it's good when we run the gamut. I think it's when we cover what Houston sports fans care about, because not everybody cares to be browbeaten with Texans news in the off season for hours and hours at a time when they can run the talk of the Astros, talk about the Rockets, talk about possibly James Harden, talk about the Texans if there's anything to talk about, or the NFL. It's the variety is what matters.
Let me try something real quick. Would it be like going through the batting order twice? Since it's like a baseball, analogy. You get what I'm saying?
Oh, I do. I know exactly
maybe
what you're saying.
Maybe it wasn't a great analogy. 713-780.
You're talking about
ESPN.
A starter? I mean, an opener? So it's essentially an opener. I mean, you're a big boy, but you're an opener. Right? And then you look for the closers that come in the next morning to clean it up and take you home? Okay, you're welcome.
Todd, the show. Astros were on pace for 90 wins without Altuve. That's crazy to me. I didn't realize that. I wasn't playing the on-pace game, but that's kind of who the Astros are. Like, they figure out ways to win games, even whenever they are without players, whether they're hurt or whether they leave in free agency. Like, the Astros have a way to sustain success whenever they lose Altuve for the first month and a half, first 40 games, when they're without Lance McCullers, when Justin Verlander leaves in free agency, when Gerrit Cole leaves in free agency, when Carlos Correa leaves in free agency, when George Springer leaves in free agency, when Dallas Keuchel leaves in free agency. I'll stop now. Like, the Astros just kind of do that. They kind of just get that done. Mr. Brostash, I would almost keep Dubon in the leadoff spot and bat Altuve in the two hole for the first couple of weeks to ease him back in. I don't hate that idea. But what position is Dubon playing? Is he playing second base? Yeah. Altuve's DHing most of the time, not all the time. And then Yordan's playing every day in left field, because they're not going to play Yordan every day in left field. Is Dubon playing center now? Is Dubon playing left? So I need more than just the batting order conversation. Because look, Altuve's going to lead off tonight because it's Jose Altuve. But maybe like Dubon can potentially bat second, like still in the top of the order. But you have to finish up the thought with where Mauricio Dubon is playing defensively.
Yeah, look, I think it's maybe musical chairs and position by committee, or one-man committee, right? I think we were talking about this. Dusty loves to give his vets days off. He likes to make sure that they don't get run down or play too many games unless your name is Jeremy Pena early in the season. But even he got a day off, and Dubon played shortstop. I think we talked about it on multiple occasions. There is a means to getting him a minimum of 3 games a week. And if you get creative a little bit more, you could probably find a way to get him 5 days a week. That's enough for him. And again, we don't know that he's going to stay this hot or be this consistent all season long. But until he cools off and tells you differently, he does warrant attention as being someone that you should look to get into the lineup more times than not. So you find a way. And Dusty's capable of being creative. I mean, and we talked about, the left side of the infield all the way over to everything but first base. And then you have outfield as a possibility and DH as a possibility. But he can give Bregman a day off and Pena and Altuve. And then, if he DHs one day and fills in somewhere in the outfield and center one day, you got 5. If not, you got 4 or 3 and you're still good.
713-780-ESPN. Got some text that we'll get to here on Altuve, and we'll get to the Maldonado discussion. When we get to the Maldonado discussion, we don't put blinders on and stick to certain things. Keith wants to weigh in on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Keith, what's going on? You're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Jeremy Branham, his guys, up and going on a Friday. Got a little Astros conversation, some free agent names out there. If you guys could pick one guy each the Astros could sign, I'll rattle off this list really quick. Justin Upton, D. Gordon, Madison Bumgarner, Cole Hamels, Trevor Bauer, Luke Voit, and Robbie Cano. Give me one name the Astros could sign. Rest of the year, help them out. Thanks, guys.
Cole Hamels. Okay, thanks. Try that on from 4 to 7.
What year are we in? Are we in 2015? Like, did somebody press the rewind button and didn't let us know? None of them.
10 years ago, that's a great list.
Cole Hamels might be the only one with, like, an ounce of gas left in the tank, right?
No.
Like, didn't he have a tryout last year where everybody was looking at him in Arlington?
Yeah, I think so. But when was the last time he pitched in
Major League? Well, he said pick one. I'm going to participate in the game and pick one. Of all of them, I'm going to pick him because I'm not taking Trevor Bowers.
The last time he logged an inning in Major League Baseball was 2020. He pitched in one game and got hurt and got lit up. Like, none of them. Like, I expected to hear names that were like, real players in 2023. This is like press rewind on a video game.
Well, there's a reason why all these guys are free agents. Like they're not major league players anymore.
Let me play along for a moment since Keith at least calls me by name.
Well, and like also one of the guys, like the first name I was going to say is doesn't count because Luke Voit's on an MLB team. Isn't he?
He's on Milwaukee, isn't he?
Yeah.
Give me Robinson Cano and hope that he's just roiding through the gills and I can get 20 games of good offensive production before he gets busted for PEDs again. Give me what do you know, Robbie Cano?
I'll take Cole Hamels. He's a lefty. Maybe he only has to get one guy out every so often for Dusty Baker. I think he could get that guy out.
You know what? Keith just became our first caller to land on Bad Take Boulevard with that call. I don't want any of those guys. Keith, you made the list. You're on next week's Bad Take Boulevard.
You know how
you
get off the list? Keith, bring the call back between 3 and 7.
713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. 8327 says, how can someone be elite but not in their prime? Make it make sense. Altuve's still in his prime. I don't really want to bark up this tree, but like Barry Bonds, his final year of his career. He wasn't the very best Barry Bonds, but he was still one of the best offensive players in all of baseball. Jose Altuve, I think, 2023 version of Jose Altuve, is not the same Jose Altuve that won the MVP. He might be as equal as an offensive player, but he's not as good a defender, and he's not nearly as good as a base runner as he was back then. He's not quite the player that he was then. He's still very, very close, but I would have him a little bit past his prime. But still, because he's a great baseball player, even he a little bit lesser than his very, very peak, is still the best second baseman in all of baseball.
No question about it. Yeah, I mean, and look, I mean, King of Twitch says Altuve needs to play every day for a month. I mean, not unless if the thumb flares up, absolutely not. But I think that he's in the midst of admitting, and everybody's admitted, he needs to get his timing back. So I put him on whatever schedule he feels comfortable with. If there's certain pitching matchups, and we talked about even when Brantley was supposed to come back, when he comes back, we didn't want him to face Ohtani in his first at-bats. If you got a guy that's been struggling to get his timing back, the last thing you want to do is have him face a Garrett Cole or some of the better pitchers in baseball. But if you're playing the A's rotation, you would think that that's the perfect opportunity to get him comfortable back on a major league at-bats.
Yeah, it could be good even if he struggles, right? Like, it can help you get your timing back a little bit. 7869, I just hope Altuve doesn't get hurt coming back too early. Agreed, but I mean, the bone's healthy. I mean, it's about him being able to recover. He's shown that he can recover, and he's back. 6941, starting Altuve at leadoff right now. I think everybody is, especially Dusty. Before he's got any timing down, it's going to be a problem, though. Baker's loyalty has two automatic outs of the first five batters. Pray for Yordan. That is a very fear-monger way to look at the Houston Astros lineup, who've won seven of their last eight. They've won three games in a row. They're playing good baseball, and we're talking about Jose Altuve being awful and Jose Abreu being awful.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, Bregman was in everybody's crosshairs, and everybody was saying that he should be thankful that Abreu was worse than he was, and now Bregman is suddenly on fire, so I guess he's gotten rid of all the Astros haters that want to find the ire in his lack of success. Now it's trying to find someone else to point the finger at. I'm not going to do that.
7869, Altuve will hit 17 bombs, bat 280, and 60 RBI. 60 RBIs will be tough in the leadoff spot. I don't think he got to 60
RBIs. I don't mind
RBIs
the rest of it, though.
Last year. He had 57 RBIs. He's not getting to 60.
But you and I were hovering in and around those numbers. HRs might be a little light, but and BP and everything, it seems like he's still swinging it with some pop. But, I mean, fact of the matter is, if he hits 280 and gives you 16 or 17 bombs, that's fine.
I think he'll be right around there. Yeah. I think that 17 bombs is a good over-under, quite honestly. I think it's a really good number if you're, like, betting it in Vegas. 713-780-ESPN. Okay, let's take a break. Let's get to the Martin Maldonado conversation, because I had a thought. Like, the Astros pitching ERA is the best in baseball. How much credit does Martin Maldonado deserve to that? With that, does he get lumped into that conversation? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Twitter poll is not going good for regurgitated Texans talk. It's not good. Astros lineup talk, 81.5%. Regurgitated Texans talk, 18.5%. That's not great. It's not great. 713-780-ESPN.
4 hours.
2 hours twice. 713-780-3776. New listeners all the time. Martin Maldonado is the catcher for the Houston Astros.
Yes.
Someone texted this because the Astros lead, at least as of yesterday, I still believe this is the case, the Astros lead all of baseball in ERA. Mm-hmm. They have the best ERA. I had this like yesterday. The Astros have the best ERA in all baseball, their pitching staff, whether it's the starting rotation, whether it's the bullpen, really, you know, the big reason why they've why they are where they are. The offense has been a little lackadaisical outside of, you know, Yordan, Tucker. We've seen brief moments of Bregman. We've seen Dubon's been good, but it's Mauricio Dubon. The pitching's carried this team to this point. Pitching carried the team last year, especially in the playoffs. When we look at this pitching staff and we talk about how good this pitching staff is relative to the rest of Major League Baseball, how much weight and how much value should we attribute to Martin Maldonado?
You know what, Jeremy? It's interesting because you can look at it from the perspective of right now, the numbers you talked about and how it relates to this season. But unlike when we talk about free agency and say normally did the guys that get paid the most in free agency are getting paid based on what they did prior to the fact that they became a free agent instead of what you're expecting them to do once they sign their contract. So most of the times the ROI is not quite what it should, you know, what you're expecting, right? So I think from the standpoint of looking at it differently than how we look at free agency, Martin Maldonado has put in a lot of work and effort to develop a lot of these young pitchers. It's mental. It's the art of the pitches called and the way he frames the game and the fact that he is managing them through while the game is going on in real time, through their starts, through tough situations. And it starts to resonate with the pitchers to where they pick up what he's putting down. They're actually calling pitches as much as him, and they're on the same page. And then they really develop into true pitchers and not just guys that throw the baseball. So I think that he gets a lot of credit for the development of the young guys as they've come along the way. And then to have a Verlander for a couple of years was a big thing too. But I think going forward, the numbers this year still say that as much as we can say, look, the pass balls, and it looks like he's a little lazy back there from time to time. But overall, I still think he has an impact on this pitching staff. So I think it would be it wouldn't be fair if we didn't give him his due for the fact that he's developed and he continues to work with this pitching staff.
I don't think it's possible to really quantify it. Like, I don't think you can measure it. And like, if you were,
ladies and gentlemen, right, I've just been handed an urgent news story. Stop what you're doing and listen.
I know it only got 18.5%, but the Killer Bees are your home for the number one all Texans news. And Jacob Martin is back.
You just interrupted me for Jacob Martin.
What? Look at him. How he just thinks he's giddy. He just thinks he got one.
I mean, look, Jacob Martin's back.
We do know the lead story this afternoon.
Well, you know, 4 hours of it.
I can't believe you interrupted my deep thought.
Sorry.
Like, the Astros didn't play baseball yesterday, so I'm sitting there in a dark room having thoughts about the Astros and like what the lineup is going to look like today. And I'm just sitting there, and I have this epiphany that I wonder how much Martin Maldonado impacts the pitching ERA that's so good for the Houston Astros. And you interrupted that deep thought. I put hours into this take.
I represent the 18.5%.
You interrupted me for Jacob Martin?
Hey.
Jacob Martin.
Joe, yeah. Stop doing that, you idiot.
Come on.
Jacob Martin. Jacob
so
Martin.
Mean.
Jacob Martin. Jacob Martin. Of how many sacks has he had? He's had 10.5 sacks in his Houston Texans career. It's actually more than I thought.
Yeah, that's a little bigger than I was expecting, too.
Now, it was three years, though. It was 3 years. 3 years of Jacob Martin, 10.5 sacks. Best player in the Jadeveon Clowney trade? I think he's the best player in the Jadeveon Clowney trade that you got back.
It's possible.
I mean, you had Jadeveon Clowney. You had the dude that got, like, I don't want to go there, but he got in trouble. Was it Mingo? Markavius Mingo. Yep. He got in a little bit of trouble.
He did.
But he was exonerated,
I think.
Was he?
I think he finally was exonerated.
Like
that.
Like the punter dude from
San Diego State? Punter from San Diego State that was with the Bills. Yeah.
I just can't believe you interrupted me for Jacob Martin. He's re-signing with the Texans to be what? Their third string outside linebacker?
Yep.
What a great addition for the Houston Texans. This just totally changes the scope of the season. How many wins does Jacob Martin add to the 2023 Texans season? 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line. If you can't get in, that's because the phone lines are busy. 713-780-3776. Jacob Martin does not add one win to the Houston Texans, Joe George. No way.
Nope.
No chance. Like, is it a nice depth positional addition? Yeah, I'll give him that. Like, I'm cool with signing Jacob Martin. I'm not cool that he's interrupting Martin Maldonado
talk. He's just kind of a guy.
Jacob Martin Maldonado. Like, he's fine. He's a depth piece. Like, I think that for a third-string outside linebacker or edge rusher, however they're going to deploy him, he's not going to be a linebacker. They're going to make him an edge rusher in pass situations. Like, he's a specialty. He's a specialist. He can get to the quarterback. He's got good speed. He's going to play on the defensive line in clear passing situations. Is he fine in that role? Yeah, he's fine in that role. He's not fine to be interrupting Martin Maldonado conversation, though.
I completely agree with that. I mean, when we have a train of thought going and a schedule to follow so that we can keep, like, really on the cusp of topics that matter to our audience and keeping them involved by skipping up to the next topic on the list so that people don't get bogged down with the same sport and the same information over and over, we got to stay on schedule.
Yeah. Triple Zero told you that Joe George, you're back on the dumb take list. For interrupting this segment for Jacob Martin news.
What an idiot.
He played the whole drop and everything. He played
the whole jingle for Jacob Martin.
Should I make a shorter one?
I'm sitting here thinking, well, it can't be Harden because nothing can be official. The season's not over for this year.
Yeah, I was wondering where the news was going to go. Like, I was thinking, you know, maybe the Texans traded for Davante Adams. I really didn't think that.
D-Hop?
I have heard. Never mind. I'm not allowed to say that.
How do you start that? I know.
My bad.
Finish it.
My bad.
It's like you're not pre-screening text messages again.
Somebody actually did text it that I heard, but I can't say it on the air. I've been sworn that I can't talk about it.
You can blame it on the texter if you said you saw it in text messages.
Yeah, but now I've kind of ruined it. Well, I let it slip.
Why don't you red flag it and then I can do what I normally do? Oh, you red flagged it. Let me read this text.
Let me delete it real quick.
Are you kidding me?
Don't talk about it on the air. I red flagged it, but don't talk about it on the air. I've been sworn to secrecy. 713-780-ESPN. But how much value and weight can you give to Jacob Martin? I'm just kidding. How much value and weight can you give to Martin Maldonado? Like, being the catcher that has the pitching staff that leads baseball in ERA, and last year he had the best catcher ERA. It's like little things like that that don't really, like, show up. Like, Dusty Baker right now would be on one end of the conversation. Like, Dusty Baker would tell you that that is the most valuable thing from a catcher. And then you have a lot of, like, the new school people where they're like, oh, that doesn't matter. Yiner Diaz should play every single day. So, like, that's your range. Dusty Baker on one side, and then the Yiner Diaz truthers on the other side saying that he should be the primary catcher. Like, where are you on that Dusty Yiner range?
I think now's the time, especially as you get closer to getting back to first place in the division, and then you were to assume, I guess, that like every other year, that they just start distancing themselves from the competition. But this is the time of the year to find out what Yiner can truly be. This is when you start really trying to break down and look into the fact that Yiner Diaz's bat, if his defense continues to get better with pitchers that he's worked with in the minor leagues, can be a guy that what we thought was going to happen in the playoffs a year ago with Vasquez that never really developed could be something that would be a true platoon by the time you get to the playoffs. And that's because when you're either down in a series or your offense is lacking for some reason, you know you've got a guy, as long as his defense continues to develop and he gets enough games to work with his pitching staff, can be a guy that holds his own defensively. He's obviously got great pop time and can really throw the baseball to get runners out as well. But he's also going to be a huge upgrade offensively when Dusty needs it.
Yeah.
And we know that Dusty's about trust. If he can eventually develop a trust with Yiner to where he can be plugged into the lineup more frequently, I think it's a bonus for the team.
If it's like a line graph and Dusty's a 1 and then the Yiner side of it is, let's just call it a 10, I think my measure of it's about a 3. Like, I think I put more value in calling a game behind the dish than, like, the average fan. Like, I would love to see Yiner Diaz get more at-bats. Like, I think that he's got some real offensive game and is going to be a pretty good offensive player when his career is all said and done, especially if he's a catcher. If he's a catcher, I think he's going to be, like, top 10 offensive catchers at his best whenever he's playing every single day. If he plays first base, it's probably a different conversation because you have way better hitting first baseman than you do catchers. But I think I'm about a 3. I think I'm closer to the Dusty side than I am the Yiner side. I give a lot of credit and value to the guy behind the dish calling the game. Because the way that I view that spot and, like, that specific, you know, aspect of the game, I look at it like it's a defensive coordinator in football. Like, the defensive coordinator's job is to call good defense to prevent the offense from offensing, right? It's to prevent the offense from scoring points, moving the football, get the defense off the field. I think that's the same thing with a defensive-minded catcher calling a game. The whole purpose for him is that he's trying to keep the other offense off the board. So I give it tremendous value. I don't think it's like Martin Maldonado has great pitching these last couple of years. It's more pitching than it is Martin Maldonado. Maldonado, like, goes to the worst pitching staff in baseball. He's not going to turn them upside down.
Thing. Yeah, ability matters,
right?
Too.
Like, if he was catching for the A's, he's not going to have the best catcher ERA in all of baseball. But I think it matters more than we give him credit for.
I agree with that. And like I said, unlike the free agency conversation, this is one where the return on the investment is also backloaded by what you've done to kind of lay the groundwork to get these pitchers to the level they're at now. Because as good as their arms were coming up to the major leagues, you got to learn how to pitch. And you got to learn all the idiosyncrasies of what it means to be a starting pitcher and a good starting pitcher in this league. And he's helped to get them there.
Yeah. 6-4-3-4, Maldi, the true measure of a leader is how the pitchers are when he isn't there. See, that's up and down. Like, there's been examples of when Maldi's not there that they're really, really, really good. And then you have some other examples, like Hunter Brown, his two starts ago and three starts ago, where he wasn't at his best, and then he starts with Maldi once, and it's great. So, like, it kind of fluctuates. It's interesting. But how much credit do you give for Maldonado with the how good this pitching staff is relative to all of baseball this year, last year as well? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. All right, this isn't regurgitated Texans talk. I believe that the Texans, amongst every team in the NFL, help their quarterback position more than anyone. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The Twitchers are lighting you up, Joe George.
Really?
For your breaking news with Jacob Martin. C saying, really, Joe? Mr. Bro Stash, really, Joe? I just gave you a compliment. Houston Dab, hashtag fire Joe George. Don't do that. We would be silent for 3 hours a day. Are we Joe's puppets now? Did we get sent off to you?
I'll make
Brendan
it up.
Used to be our puppeteer.
Twitchers, I will make it up to you guys.
Oh, yeah, you will.
I promise you.
I will vouch for that.
I will do my best to make it up to you guys at 2:45.
King of Twitch says, who's Jacob Martin? Mr. Brostash, hashtag Wheelhouse Joe. Was that your way of infiltrating our show?
Yep.
Ocho says, is Maldi the Draymond Green of the Houston Astros? I love Ocho's cross sports comparisons.
It's actually not bad, though.
He's without, like, the drama.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. He doesn't, you know, get technical fouls and try and hurt your team in other areas with his emotions. But, like, never has a guy with lesser stats done more at a certain position on a really good team. I like that part of the comparison.
Gio says Killer Bees don't deserve Joe George. That's true. You're right about that, Gio. Jet says let someone else beef besides Blank and Branham. Let the hate flow through you. I do like teaming up with Blankers more than I like
it's a lot more fun.
Blankers. King of Twitch, three segments on Jacob Martin coming up later. Yeah, 2 o'clock hour. 713-780. I'll see if you caught it. 713-780-3776. Speaking of the Texans, though, I've been reading all this commentary about what is the one area the Texans need to beef up? I've heard people demanding that the Houston Texans upgrade at a very specific position. Like, they need a receiver for C.J. Stroud. NFL.com put out a list today, top 32 remaining offseason priorities, one for each team. For the Houston Texans, finding a quality reliever. Dan Graziano on ESPN, he had a piece on the biggest quarterback questions for each team. His question was, do the Texans have enough support around C.J. Stroud? And I'm sitting here, I'm thinking to myself, haven't the Texans done more for their quarterback than any other team in the NFL? Sure, they didn't add a Devontae Adams like last year. The Raiders added an elite receiver. They didn't, you know, add Tyreek for Tua like the Miami Dolphins did a year ago. But there really wasn't any big-name wide receivers that were out on the market that have been traded. Like, the biggest wide receiver that's been on the market, correct me if I'm wrong, is DeAndre Hopkins. And he hasn't moved. He's still with Arizona. So, like, there hasn't been the opportunity to find that wide receiver. And I look at the list, the litany, of the Houston Texans offseason moves, and I'm looking around. I'm like, okay, this is a huge upgrade for the quarterback position. They've added Devin Singletary to be the upgrade over Rex Burkhead as your receiving back. Huge upgrade. They've added Dalton Schultz to be the tight end over who knew who was going to play tight end. Jordan Akins was brought in 2 weeks before the season.
O.J. Mayo.
O.J. Howard was brought in 2 weeks before the season, and they were your best two tight ends. You've invested in the offensive line with Laremy Tunsil. You've drafted a couple of offensive linemen. You're hoping one of them wins the job at center. You traded for Shaq Mason. You brought in Robert Woods, who I don't think is as good as Brandon Cooks, but he's your veteran in the room. You're getting John Metchie back, so maybe you can semantics me and say, well, they didn't really had Mechie. He was already there. And then they drafted Tank Dell in the third round. If you want to throw in Hutchinson in the sixth round, let's throw in Hutchinson in the sixth round. The Houston Texans made a laundry list of acquisitions and transactions this offseason that have improved the scenery for the quarterback, I think, more than anybody else in the NFL.
I'll disagree with you, and I'll take a page right out of the 3-7 situation to tell you that I think that the New York Jets did more. I think because the same way you just rattled off a list of guys that the Texans added, they took the wish list of one Aaron Rodgers, and they tried to accommodate him so much so that they signed a Randall Cobb. But,
sure.
but they also added guys that can catch the football, that can do the things that he's capable of doing a lot of things with, to the already good stable of receivers that they had, and then they just upgraded the position overall. Because from the way the rest of the team developed and looked like a playoff-caliber team, and they really had a rudderless ship with no one capable of playing quarterback, you went and got one of the greatest of all time that seems to still have something left in the tank, that even if he's a lesser-than version of himself, is better than anything that they had, and almost instantaneously makes them a playoff contender. And I think that's where I would say that would rival what the Texans did.
I think it's a good conversation. I think that there's probably a couple of teams that are off the top of my mind that are probably in that conversation. And maybe a softer place to be is to say that the Houston Texans are one of like the top five teams of adding personnel. But what did the Jets add that's better than what the Texans had? I think Alan Lazard.
Lazard's the first one from a blocking and overall just kind of do everything and a security blanket for Rodgers.
I think Lazard is the best target. If we're including the Jets offseason acquisitions, the Houston Texans offseason acquisitions, I think Lazard's probably the best player of that player pool. But where I personally would give the Texans the edge is the volume of it. Like the Texans added, a lot of people think that Dalton Schultz is going to be the team's leading receiver.
Yep.
They added Devin Singletary. I don't want to go through the list again. Like the Jets, I'll concede that Lazard is the best player in that player pool, but I'm not going to give him credit for Randall Cobb. I don't think Randall Cobb is going to be a weapon. Like, outside of Lazard, did they add anything else?
But here's the thing. I mean, you made the rest of your team. I think it's what he means to the team, if I get the way that the question was phrased.
I'm talking about like kind of the scenery, the
because
supporting cast.
You already had too many good receivers to where you didn't have to do what the Texans did, because you already had a receiver room that was pretty capable, that was pretty good. So I think that, you know, overall, when you look at it, yeah, I think the Texans did what they had to do because their roster and their talent level was way lower than what it's currently sitting at. Whereas the Jets already had some pretty good receivers and options for whoever played quarterback, but now you just upgraded it even more. You didn't have to go to the numbers that the Texans added, but you added quality where you needed quality. You added depth. You added competition. But you added what your quarterback is demanding, so that he can be the best he can be. And if he's even close to where he was, he makes them, you know, a huge step above where they were a year ago or more.
Yeah, I don't think you can throw in the quarterback into the quarterback scenery, though. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that you can include the quarterback in the conversation. And look, part of this...
So it's just what the team did?
The scenery to help the quarterback, to improve the quarterback. Like, Aaron Rodgers, obviously, is the biggest splash in the offseason, you know, I think. And I think that he does probably improve the Jets far more than any one single acquisition did. But part of this comes from kind of an annoyance from my point of view is like, well, the Texans still need to add a receiver for CJ Stroud. It's like, how? Like, how are they going to do that? There hasn't been any wide receivers that are out in the market. You're not trading for DeAndre Hopkins, one, because you don't want to give up draft capital for an aging wide receiver, and then secondly, pay the money left on the contract of DeAndre Hopkins. So those free agents, those trade options have not been out there. You didn't really have, you had the draft capital, but you chose to spend it elsewhere, and then you drafted Tank Dell in the third. They've done a pretty good job of surrounding some like solid veterans that are going to make the life of a rookie quarterback much easier. And quite honestly, I think I'm tired of the commentary of, well, they need to add a receiver. How? Like what? Like Jarvis Landry? Cool. That's not really an upgrade.
See, I think that you can extend the comment to say they need to add a receiver in the next couple of years, which would have been great if it was Marvin Harrison Jr.
That's
but
the point.
That's a separate conversation, I guess, because you and I have already beaten that whole opinion on the trade. But you could have, and you still can. But for this season, I think they've done all they could do. They did more than they did for Davis Mills. They got a more talented compilation of receivers than they had a year ago for Davis Mills. So they're obviously doing what they need to do to give weapons and resources to CJ Stroud. Now, will that continue? Of course it will. If he's your franchise quarterback, then it's in your best interest, Nick Caserio and others, to make sure that year after year, you're always and constantly trying to upgrade and improve the weapons that you put around your quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But for one season, to get ready for this season, by committing what you did to get CJ Stroud and put him in your starting lineup, I think you've done quite enough for him.
I think that's like this text right here. Like 2791 has a pretty good team. He says the Panthers. Like, I can listen to the Panthers, and the Panthers are in very much the same, like, vein of the Texans. If they're trying to surround a rookie quarterback with some solid veterans, like he mentions that they added Miles Sanders, they signed Adam Thielen, they also added DJ Chark, but they also traded DJ Moore. Yeah. So, like, what is the addition subtraction there? Because, like, right. DJ Moore, if we're talking again about player pools, if we're talking Miles Sanders, Adam Thielen, DJ Chark, and we're talking DJ Moore, DJ Moore is the best player in that player pool.
Yeah.
Now, I don't. The Carolina is a really good call because I do like what they've put around Bryce Young, and Hayden Hurst is there. Miles Sanders, I think, is a good, solid. I don't think he's great. I think he's a solid running back to have on that team, and certainly an upgrade over what they had last year after they traded Christian McCaffrey. So I would put the Panthers on that list, but they also had the subtraction of DJ Moore. You could argue, well, the Texans had the subtraction of Brandon Cooks. But Brandon Cooks gave you nothing last year. Like, I think Brandon Cooks is a good football player. I think he's going to be a really good number two in Dallas opposite of C.D. Lamb. I think it was a really good trade for Brandon Cooks, especially with what they had to give up. Because they got Brandon Cooks for pennies on the dollar because Nick Caserio failed in three different trade windows to trade Brandon Cooks when he should have traded Brandon Cooks. But Brandon Cooks didn't produce last year like he should have, like he's capable of doing, like he produced for you 2 years ago. So, yes, the Texans lost the talent of Brandon Cooks. I think Brandon Cooks is better than every receiver in the Houston Texans room.
Yeah.
But I think the Texans are going to have a receiver next year that produces better than what Brandon Cooks produced in 2022.
I think it's quite possible. I think, unfortunately, I think some of the options you might have traded your way out of, but I think there's still other possibilities to upgrade the position, and that's probably something they're going to focus on. And if we see the development of C.J. Stroud, I think the one thing you're going to see is that he could probably be a lot better if he had a true wide receiver one, and that's something that'll be high on their priority list. So I think it's building blocks, but it's also not going to be built in a day.
See, that's the wrinkle of this conversation, too, that's, like, very fascinating. Like, it's the additional layer of this conversation is, like, okay, I'll concede that the Texans need a wide receiver one. I don't think that they were capable of doing it this offseason. The players weren't out there. They weren't attainable in the free agency market, in the trade market. You could have done it in the draft, but you sold your soul to trade up for Will Anderson. So you couldn't. You gave up the opportunity of Jackson Smith and Jigba, Zay Flowers, Jordan Addison, because you made the decision for Will Anderson. So you took yourself out of that wide receiver first-round market by trading up for Will Anderson. So, like, now the secondary part of the conversation becomes, okay, let's all agree that the Texans at some point over the next three-year window are going to need to draft a wide receiver one. The moves they've made this offseason have taken them, I'm not going to say taken them completely out, but it's put them in a more difficult spot to acquire a wide receiver
one. It's limited your ability to get the kind of player at the kind of caliber and level you're looking for next year. Right? You can overspend, and we know that the receiver price tag has gone through the roof in terms of what you have to pay. Either you have to trade for or pay in free agency if someone's available. But your ability to get one in the draft was limited by what you gave up to get the number three pick in this last year.
In 2 years, this year and next year.
Yeah.
Well, this year and next year. I think the answer you hope for and you hope becomes like reality is that the Browns suffer and that you can still get a really good receiver, not named Marvin Harrison.
Could you have gotten a wide receiver one at 12?
Yeah.
I don't think a wide receiver won.
So you don't like, you're saying you didn't love the class of
23. Well, we talked about the fact that both guys could be like slot burners, but could they be true wide receiver one?
Yeah. Now it's a third layer of the conversation. It's really good stuff. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. How did the Texans get wide receiver one? Some people want them to do it this offseason. Chalk up Keith Pompey as the latest guy calling James Harden to be a Houston Rocket. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.